Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Family Law Podcast from Pump Court Chambers. I'm joined today by a familiar face to the pod, Cordelia Williams, a rising star in the Legal 500, who is described as tenacious and determined to succeed, and a ferocious advocate. So I'm glad we're doing this over Zoom and I have some distance. Welcome, Cordelia.
Thank you, Mark, for that gracious introduction.
The subject of the pod. On the 16th of July this year, the Observer newspaper published an article about the concept of what they call bird nesting, but what lawyers really just call nesting. And there's apparently an ITV drama called Our House, which deals with it. But I'm afraid a critical analysis of the accuracy of that TV show will have to wait, because as we all know, don't watch a legal drama with a lawyer. Cordelia, have you seen Our House?
No, but I heard of it anecdotally, and it's for exactly the same reason as you. I've avoided it. Terrible to watch a legal drama with someone in the room saying that wouldn't happen.
Oh, well, you've heard of it at least. That's more.
Yeah, I have.
Cordelia is going to talk about this concept today with us. She's got many cases with it at the moment, and one of the points this article makes is it does seem to be on the rise. But before we talk about the wider considerations, let's start with the very basics. Cordelia, when we say nesting, what do we actually mean?
Well, a nesting arrangement, depending on your definition, is usually when each parent takes it in turns to vacate the family home, leaving the other parent at home with the care of the children. So they move in and out depending on when it's their turn to care. Different to separated but living under the same roof, albeit many of the problems that arise with that arrangement are the same as those that can arise with nesting.
Yeah, so the parent is, when they're not staying at the family home, they're staying with friends or a rental property, something like that?
Yes, it very much depends on the circumstances, but either of those options or another property that the family own. And it's usually a short-term solution, although it can be helpful whilst one or both of the parents set up a new property. Although in the cases that I've seen, the ones you were just referring to, you say many, I'd say rather many more than I ever used to have. It's been literally in the last 18 months, I've suddenly had four spring up, which is a notable feature of something that I've never come across in cases before. And in none of those cases are they anticipating it be a short-term solution.
Well, we're going to talk later about problems, but just presumably the logic, I mean, obviously we can't get inside the heads of these parents, but the logic, I think, is it keeps the children in situ, so it gives them the stability and the parents are the ones that do the moving.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The philosophy behind it is overwhelmingly child focused. People are thinking of this as a good idea primarily to benefit the children. In cases where there are children of the family, it allows the children to have that stable base in the property they know as their home, usually the property one assumes is close to their school and friends. And I think people think of it as a very positive idea that could work really well. It's situations where the reality bites that mean that I'm going to reveal now, I'm not a supporter of this particular scheme. I think it has huge drawbacks and I think it ought to be entered into very cautiously.
Oh, well, thank you for that spoiler for the rest.
It is a spoiler, I'm afraid. I've got quite an axe to grind in terms of this particular arrangement, having seen it go wrong quite a few times at the moment.
Yeah, well let's know what it is. When do we tend to see it then? I mean, obviously you're saying you've seen it much more in the last 18 months.
I think it's been common at two ends of the financial spectrum. One end in circumstances where parents cannot afford to fund two households. So the parents each have alternative accommodation, either locally or not, with family and friends that's available whilst the other's in the family home. And they switch and swap with almost sofa surfing in that way. The other end of the financial spectrum where you can see nesting happen is where finances allow for the funding of at least three properties rather than two. So you have the family home and properties to accommodate each parent whilst they're not in the family home. And obviously that's a very different financial setup to the other. I think I've also seen it, if I'm going to be honest about the reality, where parents are either anticipating financial remedy proceedings or locked in financial remedy proceedings where there's a really important dispute about housing, and they're anxious about the impact of moving out of the family home and the impact that will have on their housing needs. And I find that sometimes that's quite a thinly veiled reason, along with the child-focused reasons, as to why neither of them wants to blink first and move out of the house, and then nesting comes up as a magic solution. And I think in that context, it's particularly toxic, because a dispute about housing needs is very different to a wholly child-focused reason. Well, this would work amicable breakup.
It's, dubiously child-focused in that situation. Classically, one of them just doesn't want to take the plunge and give rise to an argument that the other person should retain the house. Is that it?
That's the situation I've seen. And I say I've got four cases on the go at the moment, and two of them, it's exactly that. Neither of them wants to grasp the nettle and move out, despite the fact that arguably their mental health would be a lot better, their parenting would be a lot better, and the children would probably be more comfortable and relaxed, even though it would be a big change of circumstance.
It always does get to the situation, doesn't it? I'm straying off topic, but where you have a house, effectively one house, and one parent is desperate to keep the house, that it can be quite difficult, because it can lead to, you know, the children having an allegiance to the house rather than the parent necessarily, and how that impacts on child arrangements.
And I think parents are often very anxious about that. That if they're the one to move out, the children and their wishes and feelings, if they're of an age where the maturity of their wishes and feelings will be considered more deeply than others, I think they're really anxious about the impact it will have on the family and what the children say they want.
Yeah. The article that I talked about in the introduction said it suggested that it's a response to soaring housing costs. And I suppose that is potentially one explanation why anecdotally we're seeing a rise. And I'm saying anecdotally just because you are, as a practitioner, that's been practicing for quite a few years now, to see it suddenly increase. We are obviously going through a cost of living crisis at the moment. It is, I suppose, a natural response, isn't it, to just a real shortage of funds?
I think so. And I think that's inevitably going to be the situation that arises perhaps most commonly. The case which, the only reported case on Bailey, although it's increasingly popular as an arrangement that we're seeing, it still arguably is pretty unusual, given there's only one case where on Bailey where there's even reference to nesting. It's obviously not making its way through the reported cases too often at the moment. But also, that seems to me to be a fairly unusual case where you've got, you know, 20 million plus being part of the settlement. That's not the sort of case which is your day-to-day high street practice, as we would see. And no. It's more of a situation where people are really worried about the costs of affording a rental accommodation, whilst also paying very high mortgage repayments, and struggling to make it work in terms of how to meet their housing needs whilst they're going through an expensive separation, paying legal fees, etc. in the meantime.
Yeah, just for listeners' reference, that case that Cordelia just mentioned is A, B and C, Children Nesting Arrangement 2022, EWCA Civ 68, if you fancy a thrilling read on nesting. And I suppose one of the reasons why we may see a shortage of reported cases is that it's rarer, but also I struggle to see that it's something that the court would actively endorse or actively order.
To me, that's an understatement. I would absolutely agree. Certainly in the circumstances that I've seen it over the last 18 months, one of the cases that I have, the judge actually made a Section 37 direction. Such was the court's concern about the specific impact of this nesting arrangement on the children, because the parents were at full out war, yet trying to nest, living in and out of the same roof, you know, sharing belongings, sharing finances, and the pressure in that household was extraordinary. And I think it's, I've yet to see in either reported decisions or anecdotally my own experience, a judge enthusiastically support that arrangement being sensible for the children.
And I mean, we know the basic logic, like you just said, that it keeps the children in situ, it gives them their stability, keeps them the family home. But I know which way you're leaning, as I say, the problems that we might see from the children's perspective. How can it not be a good idea for them?
Well, can I change the way around? Because I feel bad that I've only spoken negatively about it. There must be some positives about it because more people are doing it. And that partly is because of need, but also partly because I think there is more knowledge about it sometimes being an appropriate outcome. So can I change your question around and talk about some of the positives first before I then become more enthusiastic about the negatives?
Absolutely. Let's talk about why it's a good thing.
Exactly. Because as you said, the philosophy behind it is child focus.
Yeah.
And it does allow the children to have stable base. It allows them to have everything they need in the one property. I mean, even practically, that's helpful. Having all their school books, sports equipment, toys, clothes, uniforms, and even family pets. Having all that stay the same and located in one property is undoubtedly going to make the stress of the separation of their parents easier. It might also be a particularly useful arrangement for children who have special medical or educational needs. Practically, that might be a circumstance where this really does provide a sensible solution, even in the short to medium, let alone the long term. Of course, it also allows the children to enjoy continuity of the same sort of relationships of day-to-day parenting. Their school is in the same place, their clubs, homework, play dates with other children, all continuing fairly seamlessly post their parents' separation from the same home. So there are circumstances where it can be sensible, obviously, particularly where the parents have had a relatively amicable separation, or at least one where there's a high degree of cooperation and communication.
Yeah,
because of course that flows very quickly onto the disadvantages where you don't have that. Well, that's where the problems arise.
But even if you do have that, if the alternative is all living under one roof with warring parents, and we all know from doing the return dates when we were pupils and babies that Riel case in 2012, where effectively the secondary carer, who was the father in that case, was given a short-term occupation order, booted out of the house, purely because the parental conflict was so bad, the children were suffering significant harm. It wasn't that he was the aggressor, it wasn't that the mother was the aggressor, it's just the
toxic environment
relationship. Hmm. So yeah, if it's a toss-up between nesting versus two warring parents living together and the children being exposed to that, especially what all the presumptions that come with the Domestic Abuse Act now, it's, you can see the logic.
I absolutely can. And in that situation, clearly it's a preferable situation. But I think caution must be exercised when you're thinking of that as any sort of medium term plan, other than a very short term plan whilst you're looking for somewhere else to accommodate either yourself or the other partner. Because I think the drawbacks for both the children and the parents are very real and can be quite obvious if you were to actually sit down and think about it in a more detailed way before you make the decision that's a medium or even long-term arrangement.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm gonna dial up the enthusiasm now, because I know this is really what you think. Why doesn't it work then for children? I mean, I appreciate it may be that it's, when we're saying that, we're thinking if it's medium or long-term, but in that context, why doesn't it work?
I think there are some very practical points that, as I say, I'm trying not to be too positioned, but struggling, because there are practical points which if you discuss them and go through them in terms of your creating plan, they can be overcome. But they are, one, the cost associated with the family home, cost of the utilities, cost of food. Who eats one another's food? You come down into practicalities as silly, but as perhaps important as that. The upkeep of the property, the maintenance of the property. Practically, how do you share those responsibilities? Because such an arrangement will almost inevitably result in the parents remaining financially tied to one another for as long as the nesting arrangement continues. And of course, if you've separated, usually you want to be financially independent from one another as quickly as possible. So keeping that tie can bring with it significant problems. Another practical point, any arrangement which requires somebody to pack up and move on a regular basis is likely to be disruptive. You might find that each of the parents may come to feel that the family home's not their home anymore. It's not a place they can relax. It's not a place that they feel that they're moving forward with their lives. And if it's somewhere where the other person's belongings are around them, you have the day-to-day irritants of clearing up after one another, meal times being a source of conflict. Even points as minor as that can become really significant graters on your day-to-day living. And I would say that's why it does require a very high degree of cooperation and effective communication. And in situations where there's animosity or even worse, elements of domestic abuse, controlling relationships, I think that this is an arrangement that really isn't for you. In terms of the drawbacks, I think you can probably separate them into drawbacks for the children, which are subtly different, I would say, to drawbacks for the parents. Much of the points I'm just making there are more parent-focused. Mm. They're going to affect the adults more. But the situation, as it can negatively impact the parents, as I said, was considered in quite a lot of detail by the Court of Appeal in February 2022, the case you mentioned, A, B and C. And that case, Mr Justice Cohen was the judge who was being appealed in that decision. And he had observed that the arrangements can work well, but not where parental conflict and discord remain. And in that situation, nesting arrangements do not afford good outcomes for children. He agreed with the ISW's report in that case, and the ISW concluded that the situation was giving false promises to the children as to the reality of their parents' relationship. I think that's an important point in terms of maintaining the benefits of maintaining the status quo doesn't come at any cost. And even to the children's well-being, it can be in their interests for the status quo to change in order that they recognise the new reality of their family situation.
Yeah, I mean, isn't it misleading to the children in terms of giving this idea that nothing is going to change as a result of parental separation when, 99% of cases, the family home is sold to make way for two homes. So it's just kind of perpetuating a lack of realism and kind of prolonging the separation, isn't it, rather than grasping the nettle?
Yes, I think it effectively cocoons the children from perhaps recognising the new reality of their parents' lives moving on with them in it, but in a different home, different setup. And having everything so focused on the property is not always helpful for the children. And if we have in this case, and I'm not an ISW, but we have someone far more expert than me in child psychology, it's saying that exact point.
Because you would think, again, we've all encountered those cases where we have alarmingly intelligent 9-10-year-olds, and they're gonna wise up to it, right? I mean, they're gonna be confused and kind of see that this isn't right. It's not a normal way to live where you have one parent come in for a week and then it changes over. I mean, surely for them, they're thinking, well, this is just weird, actually.
Well, perhaps. And particularly, I think one point I haven't mentioned yet, but is an important one in terms of being weird, new relationships. How do new relationships fit into this model? That's perhaps an obvious trigger point when its utility has been exhausted when one or both of the parties embark on new relationships.
And I mean, obviously, you've talked about the parents in terms of the scope for conflict. And I have to say, it does seem to me that this arrangement, even if the relationship starts amicable, is likely to change that. But from a parent perspective, just the impact on their own mental health, emotional well-being, particularly if it's not staying in a rental property, but sleeping on a friend's sofa or staying with parents, that's got to be awful.
I think that's the reason I feel like I've got a strong opinion on it, because in the cases that I have at the moment, one thing they all have in common is both my clients and the other side, and a lot of them are really struggling. and finding it a really difficult situation to tolerate. Having planned it in some of those is a very short-term solution, and then finding themselves a year plus down the line with nothing having moved forward, I think is an incredibly difficult situation to bear on a day-to-day basis. As you say, not really feeling like they have a proper base of their own. And I can see that the A, B and C decision, this was a point raised then that the arrangement in that case had significantly overextended beyond the time it was helpful. And the judge found it was depriving actually the children of the chance to spend quality time with their mother at her new home, which in turn impinged on her ability to be as good a parent as she could possibly be.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, of course, that's it, isn't it? If you are a parent who is suffering, it's not overstating it to say probably depression and anxiety as a result of separation.
Oh, absolutely.
Extended, you're not going to be as good a parent as you could be. And that is obviously going to make the children suffer. So even when you're doing this arrangement and thinking, well, this is what's best for the children, actually taking a step back beyond the very short term, it probably isn't.
I think that's something I would completely agree with. However, it's a situation that I think very few people enter into planning it to be anything more than a couple of months long. And that's why I hope that we can raise some awareness of the need for caution when you're even planning it to be a short-term arrangement, because it's very easy to develop a new status quo that one parent then refuses to move on from. And that's how I've seen it arise fairly organically, but without much planning, and then be locked into a situation further down the line of real difficulty. I think it's helpful to have a reported decision where we do have the views of an independent social worker being not only followed at first instance, but also supported to some extent, albeit not very explicitly, but the Court of Appeal to some extent condoning.
Of course, the ISW didn't give evidence, did he, in the decision that was subject to the appeal?
No, and I think that's perhaps a point about this judgment that is useful for another reason, which is that it reminds us that where we have interim hearings carried out on the basis of submissions only, we need to have the confidence to apply to cross-examine the expert. Are they available? Are they available today? Do we need to adjourn to make them available? If we challenge the recommendations that are being relied upon, even at an interim stage, when important decisions being made, because the father's appeal failed on that basis. Lord Justice Baker did not agree that the interim hearing was unfair, proceeding without cross-examination.
Which is quite shocking, actually. I mean, it's that interrelation, isn't it, between wanting an effective DRA where you can move things forward if you've got the evidence, and or a judge just saying, well, in the absence of any oral evidence, I can't do anything. And there's that tension, I suppose, between making every hearing matter.
Absolutely. And I think the anxiety of worrying about what could happen at an interim hearing perhaps is arguably increased after this case, that there can be meaningful changes to the status quo at interim hearings. And it's the Lord Justice Baker approved Mr. Justice Cohen's decision of cracking on, making the change to the arrangements where the judge had concluded at an interim stage, and it wasn't in the children's best interest for these arrangements to continue.
So just coming back, because we could get into fascinating discussions about case management. We talked a bit about the problems for the parents, problems for the children. I had on my list what better alternatives are there out there, but I suppose it's very fact specific to the case.
I think that's perhaps the hardest question to answer. What are the better alternatives? Of course, it completely depends on your finances. If there's the money available, I think the obvious solution is to avoid this where possible and set up new homes as sensibly and quickly as affordable. However, in situations where finances don't allow, and obviously this is a cost of living crisis, we're finding it more and more commonly amongst clients that they're very worried about mortgage repayments.
in a situation where rental payments are no better, it's sometimes thought of as the only alternative. But there isn't a magic solution of better alternatives, I'm afraid. I'm finding it very difficult to answer that question. And perhaps that's why we're seeing it more commonly happen, people feeling forced into it.
I suppose the answer is, if there is an alternative, you should explore it. I just come back to your reported case where she got, the mother in that case got 22 million euros, and yet they carried on with the nesting arrangement. And surely you think, well, if you've got 22 million euros in the bank, and presumably if she's getting 22 million, the father's got at least 22 million or more, you buy your own house and you have two homes. Because do you think there's this kind of, at that point, it becomes overprotective of the children, doesn't it? You need to trust them, trust that the children will adapt to the new reality, because they're going to have to at some point, and all you're doing is delaying the inevitable.
I think the difficulty perhaps in that case was that the children were explicitly saying, we don't want to move. And the parents were bending over backwards, understandably bending over backwards to try and facilitate that. And the judge did have an understanding that that was putting the parents in a difficult position, but it's only for so long that the children's wishes and feelings in those circumstances are actually in accordance with what's in their best interests. And I think a phrase that you very helpfully put was to say that you must trust your children to adapt to the new reality. And it's not always helpful to be prioritising what you perceive to be in their best interest at any cost.
No, and not be guided necessarily by their wishes and feelings, because obviously that's why we have a court. If it was just children making decisions, then, oh, we'd be out of a job, Cordelia.
Indeed, wouldn't that be a worrying prospect?
Indeed. So I think I was going to ask about kind of why we're seeing on a rise, but I think we've really covered it, haven't we? That there's the economic situation is perhaps a factor.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. As I say, in most of the situations I've seen it arise in, it's finances, cold, hard finances that have been the driver, and the fear of letting go of the former family home and then finding yourself in a one or two bed rental flat as a very lesser alternative to the accommodation, you know, that you found yourself in at the family home. And I think if there's any message that this podcast sends out, it's to exercise real caution when you think of this as a clever solution to that financial problem.
I suppose it's, if you want to do it, but have stage two.
Exactly. Know where you're going to move on.
Yeah.
No, have an exit strategy, because otherwise it can very quickly turn into something which is disastrous for both your mental health and well-being, and indeed sometimes the children's.
Always, I think, good advice that Q gave to James Bond in Die Another Day or World's Not Enough, I forget which one. Always have an exit. completely irreverent comment there. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Cordelia. It's been really helpful.
You're welcome. Thank you for the invitation.
A pleasure. And coming up on the rest of this series, we have an interview with the remarkable Keely Lengthorne, who talks to Imogen Robbins about the tragic loss of her baby and her campaign for a serious improvement in provision for baby loss leave. She's a remarkable woman, and it's a really essential listen. It's coming out in September, and you will need the tissues ready for that one, I think. Otherwise, thank you very much for listening. As always, any new ideas, please do get in touch with me or Tara. Our emails are on Chambers' website. Until next time, goodbye.